Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Our Common Ground. I'm Janice Grant, and I'll be listening for you. Around all the time. And I'm calling us up, particularly those of us who are here as clergy. There is a moral authority that we have dared to stand on as an African-American people. There is an authority that we have dared to stand on as women. But when it comes to our sexual orientation, we're still a little mealy-mouthed. We're still a little mealy-mouthed. Because there is something deep within our psyche, because of the way that we continue to be treated, that is making too many of us question whether or not God really does, in fact, love us equally.
And we want to thank you for being with us here tonight at Our Common Ground. Our call and number, if you want to write it down, is 1-347-838-9852. I'm Janice Graham, and we thank you so much for being with us. Tonight we're going to be having, I'm going to be hosting, hopefully a frank discussion about the whole issue of homophobia in the Black community. And we're asking the question as to how much more injury are we willing to mete out to each other on the issue of the isms. And we're asking you, what are your thoughts about facing our fears, and what are the fears? What is this whole notion that homophobia seems to be an accepted form of culture, which it is certainly not one that is part of our traditional culture, but it certainly is something that prevails in our community. And what caught my eye was a real piece. We talked somewhat about this notion of homophobia in the Black community last week on Saturday night open mic, but we didn't get into it. But right after that, I often read the work of Michael Rowe, who is an award-winning independent journalist, essayist, and author. And most of his work has to do with homophobia. And I thought that it was a bit of irony that we had talked about the whole issue of homosexuality in the Black community. And then this article appeared, and the article really is about last Sunday night, the New York State Police on Long Island logged a 911 call about a toddler in cardiac arrest. The boy was 17-month-old Roy Jones. He was rushed from the Shinnecock Indian Reservation in Southampton, New York, to Southampton Hospital, where he was pronounced dead at 9 o'clock. And Rowe writes in his piece that according to authorities, the toddler had endured a savage beating. He had been punched repeatedly with closed fist and grabbed by the neck. And by the time 9/11 had been called, he was already in cardiac arrest from the sheer brutality of the assault. And it was really too late to save his life. Charged with this manslaughter in the first degree and held without bail was the toddler's mother's live-in boyfriend, 20-year-old Pedro Jones. And if you'd like to read the piece, I have posted the link to the piece, which appeared in on the Huffington Post. But Pedro Jones was babysitting. The pair lived together on the Shinnecock Nation tribal land, even though Jones was not a member of the tribe himself. They were reportedly going to be married, and Jones referred to this toddler, a 19-month-old baby, a 17-month-old toddler, as his baby, though in fact he was not the biological father. And he explained to the police that he was trying to make him act like a boy instead of a little girl. Then he went on to explain that he had never struck the kid before, or at least that hard before. And he also told the troopers that the little boy had been too feminine and that he'd been trying to toughen Roy up by literally beating the life of him. Now, all of us recoil in horror to this story. Of any news report that about a child's death at the abusive hands of an adult, Michael Rowe wrote, infanticide is the ultimate forfeiture of our humanity, rightly seen as a perversion of the very essence of the natural order and the circle of life. He also wrote that there is an added and significant dimension to the tragedy, and it is that the reason given for the beating is that even at 17 months, the toddler was perceived by his killer to be effeminate. Roe writes that that is some kind of madhouse logic indeed, but you and I know that it certainly is an attitude that prevails in the black community, that somehow we have gotten so twisted about the role of machoism in our men, that this is not a crime that is far from that attitude. So tonight at Our Common Ground, and we certainly welcome you, we have Voxor in the house and Steins and Alpho and a guest. We're going to host a frank discussion about black macho and homophobia in the community. We're also going to look at how our churches, our church leadership, advises us in regard to homophobia. And my question to you is, as a people, can we afford to mete out to each other more injury? Are we willing? Do we have the courage to face our fears? What are we afraid of? How do we believe that we can be in judgment over the sexual orientation choices that people make? And bottom line, what does it do to the souls of our brothers and sisters, to our children, and to our community? I put together what I believe is a mosaic of voices that we need to hear in order to analyze these attitudes. And I'm hoping that it gives us a chance to really look at some of the problems, some of the issues around the attitude, and how it really links into the question, the crisis of racism in our lives. I'm Janice Graham. You're tuning in to Our Common Ground at Blog Talk Radio. We hope to get your calls. Our number is 347-838-9852. Let's do some serious talk here.
Put it out, let the streets talk, no promo. A real man shouldn't have to say no homo.
One of my favorite things about hip-hop is our everlasting love of language. One of my least favorite things about hip-hop is our everlasting fear of being gay. So I guess I shouldn't be surprised that one of our favorite slang terms combines our tremendous passion for wordplay with our tremendous insecurity about sexuality. The no-homo phenomenon is an old thing, a sad old thing, but it's still a new thing to a lot of old people. So as a public service, I will now present a brief history of no-homo. The phrase no-homo, which traces back to an earlier slang word, pause, is a defense mechanism utilized by young men who are not only afraid of being gay or looking gay, they're actually afraid that the words they speak might sound linguistically gay.
It's basically when someone says something that could be even vaguely construed as homoerotic or homosexual, someone will put no-homo either before or after the phrase.
No homo was first popularized by New York's Dipset crew, led by the rapper Cam'ron, who was known for being clever with words and also for wearing a lot of pink, and wanted to be absolutely certain that nobody inferred anything from that.
Are you gay?
Not at all.
Okay.
Far from it.
So, like, why do people feel like they need to keep reinforcing that over and over?
But this isn't even about being gay. This is about saying something
gay.
This is about
letting someone know that you're not gay. Who cares, right?
No, this is about saying gay things by accident. No homo. This isn't about a person really being gay.
Yeah.
We know that they're not really gay.
Hip-hop is definitely homophobic. There's no doubt about that. But so is society homophobic. The difference is that hip-hop has a megaphone, and it puts it up to the rest of the world.
You know, like the no-homo thing is definitely a key thing in any conversation you have with your friends. You can say something that's slightly like, you know, like, yo, it's time to play with your ball. You know, someone a basketball, but someone could be like, whoa, he said something kind of gay. You have to say, oh, no-homo, pause. You have to, like, really assert your masculinity right away. It's kind of messed up. You have to do that.
From that great speech.
If we are honest with ourselves, we must admit that none of our hands are entirely clean. If we're honest with ourselves, we'll acknowledge that our own community has not always been true to King's vision of a beloved community. If we're honest with ourselves, we have to admit that there have been times when we've scorned our gay brothers and sisters instead of embracing them.
It kills the soul. And it puts us at risk. It puts us at risk of destructive behaviors. Our down low brothers are getting a bad rap. They're getting a bad rap and they're taking the heat. They're taking the heat. Why do people lie? They lie when they can't tell the truth. The question we need to be asking ourselves is, why can't they tell the truth? Why is it such a scary thing to tell the truth? Why do you have to sacrifice your authenticity, your integrity, the pure integration of your mind, body, and soul? Why do you have to risk that for fear of excommunication from the church or alienation from your family? We keep looking at AIDS like it's a supply side issue. Even the RAND Corporation has figured out that wars on nouns don't work. The war on crime, the war on poverty, the war on this thing and that thing. There aren't enough condoms in the world to stop the spread of HIV. We need to ask ourselves is why? Why is there a demand for high risk behavior?
Mm-hmm.
Because two women can't make no baby.
Exactly. You can't procreate.
Always want
to
eliminate the man.
Stop procreation.
Exactly.
Okay.
It'll never happen. Look,
exactly.
Just simple things like this here. You can have two women together and just simple. Have a jar, a jelly.
Mm-hmm.
Baby, you need a man to screw that
exactly.
tap off.
You see, but that's been the trick of the enemy. Mm-hmm. He has changed the woman. Let me just read it so nobody don't think that this is my word.
No.
For this cause, God gave them up unto vile affection.
Uh-oh, there's a big shot.
My name is Raymond Boney, and I am the host for this evening's gathering. This is actually one of the first opportunities I've had to bring together an eclectic collective of gay black men who will discuss tonight several relevant issues as they pertain to being black and gay in America.
First of all, I'm going to thank Raymond very much for allowing us into his home, putting together this wonderful meal, and giving us an opportunity to do what I think is going to be the first of a very important series of dialogue.
It was in D.C. that I came into myself, and I guess came out of myself even, because it wasn't until I moved to Washington at 25 years old that I had my first man-on-man encounter.
My coming out process, I think personally, was probably an un-process. I remember one day sitting in my office, and my mom called me, and she said, Raymond, you're homosexual. And I said, well, okay. It was a lot to kind of digest at the moment. To that point, I had not, at 25 years old, I had not ever had sex, but I certainly hadn't had sex with another man.
I'd like to maybe talk about how we affirm then our gayness within ourselves, with our community, and others younger than us. How are we affirming our gayness and blackness? I think for me that's a really important topic.
We may not have, in a traditional sense, sort of raising a family, but we take care of our families though. You know, we're very engaged with our parents, sisters, brothers, nephews, nieces, godchildren, and I think the community at large.
That you do want to have.
I do want to have kids, yeah.
At what age and perhaps by what means do you want to pursue a desire to want to have?
You know what? By that time, whatever happens.
Well, no. I guess I'm afraid that you want to adopt.
Okay.
I think there's this misconception that black gay men don't want to have any children, don't have a desire to have any children. And that's not the case. I mean, I know myself included, friends of mine who want kids.
Probably my biggest contention about the whole DL phenomenon recently was the fact that it kind of bred this ideology of somehow not being an affirmed, you know, gay black man. You know, because I
don't think that most black women are unappreciative of the fact of an openly gay black man, you know, living his life by the terms he set. I think that they would find that much more appreciative than being misled. And I think that as a result of that, there's a bit of collateral damage, you know, that when you have men who are self-identified as heterosexual, but, you know, engage in homosexual practices very privately or very secretively, that there's some collateral damage for openly gay black men in respects to black women.
It's like we sit there and put God into this very homophobic box as if just because straight people say God doesn't love us, that all of a sudden we say, well,
it must be true.
It must be true. And I think that's very, very dangerous because it's like,
sure it
because it feeds off into how we treat ourselves.
I was part of a Bible study and it was taught very clearly homosexuality is wrong, it's sinful, and it's an ugly thing, so don't do it.
When I was about 14, maybe 14, 15, I started to come into myself when I was associate minister of music at a church in Oklahoma City. And, you know, my pastor found out I was homosexual and he sat me down. And the pastor said, you know, this is not godly. You have a position with the church, a public position with the church, and you can't be a musician and still act in this way. It was the most heartbroken thing that ever happened to me because I had such a love for music and such a love for the church.
I think also that there is a source of healing that can be community-wide for black folks found in the black church. Should it ever decide to have a real conversation, you know, with black gays and their straight counterparts, there would be considerable healing and affirmation kind of brought forth?
After a few weeks, I did something that I never thought I would do. I went and told them I wasn't gay anymore. And he was like, you know, we have to get you in some classes, you know, to make sure you're not gay. And I was like, no, I'm fine, I'm all right. And so he let me back in to play. But it was never the same.
People have always asked me this in terms of what it's like being black and gay. And I always tell them, well, it's hard. But one thing it's always taught me is to be a whole lot more compassionate towards people who are different from me. And that is something that I would love to be a part of my legacy. And it's one of the things.
Throughout my childhood, throughout coming up, I always dealt with my black identity. There was never any question about having to deal with that. Fortunately, I grew up, around in a black community, so, you know, it was a positive experience. But at the same time, you know, I knew that I was, you know, discriminated against when I stepped out of my world, out of my bubble. And I think probably in high school is when I came more into myself as a woman and dealing with how I was discriminated in that way. But it was a big wham when I figured out that I wasn't just a woman, I wasn't just black, but I'm a black woman. And that alone and those two identities, making those meet up and being like, wow, you know, I can be around, all black people, and I'm going to realize that, you know, I'm going to get some shit because I'm a woman here, and I'm a woman in this space. And then when I would go in, you know, I'd be in circles, and we were talking about, you know, how we were discriminating as women, and I would look around and notice that there were a lot of white women here, and I'm thinking, how you gonna know what I'm experiencing because you're not getting the crosshatch, you know? And even when we would talk about how we were discriminated as a woman, if I would mention the fact of, anything that was connected to blackness, it was like, you know, why are you bringing that into space, or how are we all connected because of that? And it really bothered me, but it was almost like gut-wrenching when I had to acknowledge the fact that I was also going to have to bring in my lesbian identity into that. Like, how am I going to figure this out? Like, how am I going to, I felt like, you know, a weight was now on my shoulders, you know, in a sense, because not only did I have to figure out how all this worked together and how I could be discriminated in so many ways, I also had to deal with how people were going to see me, and the fact that it's very easy to go through, you know, for me to go through my day, and people are going to be able to see that I'm a black woman, but they're not going to acknowledge that I'm a black lesbian.
The hardest part about being a couple in America is that at work, at church, at school, I'm expected to be married to a guy. And, you know, I wear my rings, and someone will say, oh, you're married. Yes, what's your husband like? So now I have to dance through the pronouns or simply, you know, break their face and come out and say, well, she is a clinical psychologist. She's a warm, wonderful person, and you really should meet her. You'd like her. She's got a sweet spirit.
Every time I look at these trees up here, it makes me think about you coming out here and you just volunteering to garden around the
home. Yes, I had to beautify the house.
It wasn't that bad.
It was just a bachelor's place.
Well, it needed a few plants.
It needed my touch.
Yeah, but I remember that moment when we started flirting in front of the tree.
Right in front of that tree.
Yeah.
We met in church. And she doesn't remember.
I do remember that. I was in the choir. I remember that. I do.
Yeah. Honestly, the day that I saw her in church that first time, I thought, she should be with me. She makes me feel important. She makes me feel needed.
You know, we have a spiritual foundation. We have a love for our culture, for African people. So those are just only some reasons that we fell in love.
On dreary days or rainy days, I like to read, and sometimes we just go out and sit on the porch and talk and watch the grass grow. It's cool and shady, and it can rain or whatever, and you don't get wet out. It's nice. the beginning of the year, I had a surgical procedure. And when I went in, Amory went with me. She was by my side when I went into the surgical suite. When they were preparing me for the procedure, I told the nurse, the physician's assistant, and the surgeon that I wanted her to be told when the procedure was over and whether I was all right, what went on. So I went into surgery, and they escorted her to the waiting room where the other family's members are. And when I came out of recovery, they told me to get dressed, and they said, "Do you have anyone with you?" And I said, "Yes, my partner's here." She was supposed to be told whether I'd made it through what happened in the procedure. Does she know that I'm even out? And they said, "Well, I don't know. We'll see if we can go find her."
It was very distressing, you know, to be sitting in the waiting room and waiting and waiting and waiting and seeing other families getting the attention that, you know, that I needed to have at that time, and it just really devalues us as a couple.
As a married couple, a husband and wife, the husband or wife would always be told by the physician, so-and-so came out okay, and this is what we found. She got nothing. She got none of that, and I got none of that.
It really reduces us to almost like second or third class citizens, and we deserve the same kind of protections through the law as anyone else. Domestic partnership is fine, but I think that having marriage takes it to a different level. It says that I am equal to you. I'm not less than you.
I'm hoping that my neighbors will get to see me as a person who deserves to have a marriage, a real marriage.
We don't know how it got there. Oh, yeah, we don't know where homos came from. Oh, yeah, this California, I can't say that. We don't know where lesbians came from. Some of y'all laughing because you're hiding what you are, but I'm about to bust you up because you cannot have the Holy Ghost and be a sissy. And if you preachers don't say amen, I'm going to question what y'all preaching. Because I wonder how we got homosexual bishops now. I wonder how it got in. We were so afraid of the old church that even when we smoked, we popped so many mints, we did Listerine and Scope. Now sin comes in and it's unrestricted, don't care who know, and speaking in tongues more than us.
It's interesting to me to see young black women who I presume to be dykes in that ghetto hip-hop clothing. Because on one level it's saying to me, I'm going to fuck with gender. I'm going to be visible as a lesbian, even though my term, or a butch, even though my term for it is ag. And fuck you, you know, this is me. This is, I mean, you know, this is my presentation. You deal with it. Now, our problem is we are a youth negative culture, period. And if you is a poor black youth, a poor black ag youth like Sakia Gunn, you ain't got nowhere to go except the Hetrick Martin, and they ain't everywhere.
Being a black lesbian to me is just very much, it's power, and it's something that I had to fight really hard for.
Cheryl Swoops, James Baldwin, Barbara Jordan, Baynard Rushton, Josephine Baker, Barbara Jordan, Alice Walker, Luther Vandross, Audre Lorde, Angela Davis, Jean-Miguel Basquiat, Ruth Ellis, Charles Pugh, Tracy Chapman, Billy Strayhorn, Joe Beam, Alvin Ailey, Alice Walker, Octavia Butler, Elin Harris, Felicia Snoop Pearson, Little Richard, Langston Hughes, Tevin Campbell, Glenn Burke, Essex Hemphill, Jermaine Stewart, Keisha Cummings, all impacted the world with music, art, literature, and politics. Shall I go on? T.J. Holmes, Johnny Mathis, Sylvester, Out and Proud. And when we come back, we'll take your calls at 347-838-9852. 954 is already on the line. We'll be right back at Our Common Ground at Blog Talk Radio. I'm Janice Graham. You're listening to Our Common Ground. I'm Janice Graham, and I'll be listening for you. Around all of the time. And I'm calling us up, particularly those of us who are here as clergy. There is a moral authority that we have dared to stand on as an African American people. There is an authority that we have dared to stand on as women. But when it comes to our sexual orientation, we're still a little mealy-mouthed. We're still a little mealy-mouthed. Because there is something deep within our psyche, because of the way that we continue to be treated, that is making too many of us question whether or not God really does, in fact, love us equally. And thank you once again for being with us. We're going to go to our phones at Our Common Ground. 954, you're on the air. I respect you. What's your comment?
Sister, I hope you're going to give me time with this, and I'm not
going to... Oh, Rhonda, no, we're not going to give you the whole hour. But make your point. We're open for you to make your point. What's your fear?
My thing is this. Listen, my experience I had with James Baldwin and Flo Kennedy, and I'm going to go into this with you for a little bit.
Aronde, we understand James Baldwin was homosexual, Flo Kennedy was homosexual. Did you have some, what was your issue with their homosexuality?
If you'll allow me. You know, there was positive and negative, and I'm going to show you what the positive and the negative is. With James Baldwin, the positive was he had three fine-ass nieces, Cheryl, Lynette, and Carol. And this was back in the 60s. And we knew them. We knew his other relatives that were very Afrocentric. My connection with Flo Kennedy was during the Howard Beach riots in New York City. And she interviewed me twice during that time at the Charlie Parker Estates, and I'm pretty sure you know Flo Kennedy.
I knew her, but my parents were more, you know, knew her better than I did. I couldn't say I really knew her.
Okay. Well, anyway, I met her, and I knew her under that during those times. And James Baldwin, and everybody knew what he was about at the time. And my negative experiences with homosexuality, I remember my mother being called a fag hag among one of her girlfriends. And we understood that when we, as kids, met one of her little friends that took advantage of my youngest brother. We almost killed this dude, you know, what we found him doing.
Well, that's not homosexuality. That's pedophilia.
That goes into it, man.
Every homosexual is, you can't fit the two together. A pedophilia, a pedophile is a sexual predator.
Okay, well, I won't take away from your program, but let me say this, man.
But wait a minute, I want to get clear on this, Aranda, and I want to have this conversation with you. I can understand that a person, I think pedophiles are the worst things walking the earth, whether they're heterosexual or whether they're homosexual.
Okay,
they're the worst things walking on the planet.
Then why can't men and women be together? Like I said in the beginning.
But men and women are together. The question of this show.
I have to be promoting this side of the coin. But let me ask you this. When you look at Arianna Huffington and Anita Bryant, you know, both their men were homosexuals. And both these women came out and detested it. Okay.
Uh-huh.
During Vietnam, when I served, you know, we knew cats were homosexuals. You know, long as they functioned and took care of business, and if you couldn't get any poontang over there, man, something was wrong with you, you know, whether they wanted it or not. The thing is that homosexuality exists, so does racism. You know, I meant guys that were racist, and I meant guys that were homosexual. And you know what? The experiences that I had dealing with both of these entities is that I knew that these were human beings at some point in time. But the point is, they never perpetuated a racist. All right, let me say it this way. A racist, even though he hated blacks, Hispanics or Asians, whatever the deal was, at the end of the day, man, when you're in the bush, you came back, you realized what time it was, even homosexual. We all knew what time it was at the end of the day. And when we got back to the world, then if that's what you wanted to do, that's what you wanted to do. If I met these dudes back in the world, I would still address and acknowledge them because we had a camaraderie at that time as men.
Yes.
Now.
But let me ask you a question. Do you look at male homosexuals as not men?
No, because they're part woman, part man, and full devil. No. I'm not out here to kill them. I'm not out here to lynch and round them up and throw them in an island somewhere. You know, these folks will eventually, and you know, I'm going to blame women for a lot of this shit too. You know, but.
You're going
to
blame women? You're going
to
blame.
Yes, women, mothers, for a lot of that stuff. Because they uphold and perpetuate some of that crap, even if the men aren't around. When I grew up until my mother's generation, my grandmothers, man, if you a little punk, a little sissy, you wouldn't.
Don't use
wouldn't
those
happen.
Terms, Aranda. I mean, that's like saying nigga and coon to me.
But I'm not saying that, and you know exactly what I'm saying, sister.
No,
I'm saying.
I don't know what you're saying, because one of the things, this is what I hear you saying. You're saying that you blame women for.
Not all of them, but a lot of them. Yes, I do. Yes, I do, and I'm gonna tell
for
you
what?
Why.
You blame them
you
for
why.
What?
Huh?
You blame them for what?
Encouraging that, because first of all, they thought that
encouraging homosexuality.
Yes, encouraging it, and first of all, they thought they were protecting their sons. Second of all, they had animosity towards the father if he walked out on her and the child. I can understand
mm-hmm.
that anger and hate, man. Believe me, I can.
Yeah. No? Well. I don't understand.
I never turned my daughters into trying to be lesbians behind what the mother did. I understood
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but I don't know. I don't know how.
That's the reality of it.
My problem is I don't know how you train someone to be a homosexual. I just don't know
you
how
do
that
train
happens.
Them. When you allow them to go ahead and dwell in
so what do you do? What do you
feminine.
Do? What do you do? Do you? I mean, do you? As you know, the reading material for this show was the article by Michael Rowe when Pedro Jones, 20 years old, beat a 17-year-old toddler to death because he reportedly said to the police that he was trying to teach him how to be stop being a girl and be a boy.
Okay. Is this the same guy that was the one that shot his son in the face?
No.
Over
no.
Okay, that's a different
this
deal. Okay.
This happened last Sunday night.
All right.
This happened last Sunday night on the Shinnecock Indian Reservation in Southampton, New York.
Mm-hmm.
A 20-year-old man who was babysitting a 17-month-old boy repeatedly punched him and grabbed him around the neck until he had a cardiac arrest. And he told the troopers that the little boy had been too feminine and that he'd been trying to toughen him up by literally beating the life out of him. So that's the only thing that I can think of as to how in the world someone might... I think these kind of attitudes that women are training their sons in order to protect them to be homosexuals because they think that's protecting them, that people
that's
allow it. How do you not allow it, Aronde?
How do you not, first of all, the woman, first of all, if the man's not there, and even if the man is there, if he is truly centered and focused, the boy, the child would not have evolved into that type of environment and mindset.
Well, I think that
but
the scientific...
the woman has to do it on her own, and she is burdened and been neglected, man, that's going to bring a whole bunch of issues. Where
well, Aronde, I think you need to check some of the scientific information on some on the theories that you have. For instance,
no, I don't, sister. I have 5 kids that I've raised with 2
but
different
that's,
women.
But that's 5 out of
you.
50 million.
I'm telling you what I do know for a fact. None
well,
of my kids are homosexuals. One died.
Well, I'm sorry to hear about. I think I've issued to you my condolences before about the death of a child because that's a hard thing. But what I'm simply saying is this: that in the genetic makeup of every human being, there is something that is formed. They are finding that the scientific journals have been reporting over the last 20 years that they're finding that there are homosexual people generally have a different kind of hormonal makeup. It's the same thing that children, babies that are born that have both a penis and a vagina. So let's find out what 804 has to say. You had some interesting things that I certainly don't agree with, Aronde.
I think you're also perpetuating something. Do you have children, Sister Janice?
I have a daughter who's 32 years old, yes.
32 years old. My oldest is 34. You and I are in the same clique here.
Yeah, we're in the same
so,
age group.
You know, listen, I'm 58. Look, the thing is that if my children deviated from what me and the mothers taught them, that's fine. They're adults. I can live and deal with that. But that's their life. That's the negative and positive experience of the children growing or this type of society. I'm not going to uphold that, man. I don't want to see my grandchildren gravitating to that type of stuff because I uphold man and woman relationship and guide man and woman for what they will allow us to accept in this damn United States of America. You know, I'll go
okay,
Aronde, Muslims and Hindus.
I hear you, and I think, you know, at this stage
okay,
of the
I
game,
know.
It's very
off.
Little that
like,
I'm going to be
I
able.
I get where you're coming from, and I love and respect you. But
I
like
love
I
and
said,
respect
I know
you.
Flo Kennedy and James Baldwin, so I'll
well,
let it go with that.
I mean,
thank
if you
me.
Think about people like Audre Lorde, and we want to thank Aronde for his call. We're going to go to 804. You're on the air. I respect you. What are your thinkings about this?
Hey, Sankofa. This is Steins here.
Steins, good evening. Thanks for calling.
Good evening to you, too.
Let me ask you a question.
Yes,
Did you read the article about the murder of the 17-year-old child last week?
Yes.
Okay. You know, it's hard for me to. It is the kind of thing that I think that we have to examine our attitudes and the way in which we culture both men and women about who they are sexually and what their sexual identities mean. And I'm still posing the question, what are we afraid of? I certainly would prefer, if I would prefer a child that I love or a man that I love, I would much prefer them to be a homosexual than to be a thug. What
well,
do you
are
say?
You trying to get it? Well, I'm going to help you out. I'm going to let you.
No, I don't need any help on this issue. I'm real clear on this issue.
No,
what
you
are
need
your
help.
Thoughts?
You need help in the area of thinking what
I don't need any help.
Black man.
I
don't
need
any
help. No.
Well, I can't say nothing. Different.
I need you to express
I mean,
your. Where do you think I need help?
I'm going to help you out on this issue. In
no,
area
you can't
of,
help me out. Where do you
well,
think
I
need
help?
Help?
You trying to get into the head of a heterosexual man, right? Black man.
No, I'm just trying to get in the head of black people who choose to hate other black people, to be opposed to them, to inflict injury on them, to extract and isolate them and ostracize them from our community, to think that somehow...
That's the same thing of what I'm talking about. I'm trying to let you into...
No,
head.
No, no, no. I don't need teachers here. I need for you to... Where do you stand on homosexuality, Stein?
Wow. I think that I don't agree with it, of course, but I'm
you
not.
You don't agree with
a,
what? You don't,
agree
with somebody
it.
Else's sexual orientation? Is
no,
it a fear?
But I don't care. No, but I don't care. See, if you let me articulate this the way I can.
Well, go right ahead.
And stop cutting me off, then maybe I can do something. All right. There are two issues that a black heterosexual man will turn to the Bible on. One is controlling a woman, and the second one is the gay and lesbian issue. It's the only time you'll see a black man actually going to the Bible, unless they are professed, quote-unquote, you know, Christian, somebody that that's in it. But the average casual person who occasionally go to church, they'll only use that in those two issues. I think that, and I'm speaking for myself, and I'm speaking for most black men that I know, there is something within us that, I don't know, it's a taboo type thing where if we identify with someone that is a different sexual orientation than we are, inside of us, it's something within us that will say, well, you know what, you maybe need to question who you are.
So, that's a curious position, Steins. Why would someone else's sexual orientation pose a question for someone whose sexual orientation is different?
All right, I'll give you an example. See, I don't go out looking for
I ask the question. Answer my question.
I'm going to give you an example. So you don't think I'm out looking for this stuff. I go to a gym that's predominantly gay, right? It's in the downtown section of Richmond, Virginia. I've been going to this gym for 15 years. Love this gym. The majority of people who go there, and it's known that this is a meeting place for gay people. So at first I was real rigid because, you know, I don't go that way. But I was real rigid when it came down to dealing with these folks until I started to understand that, hey, these people don't care nothing about you in that way. And until that thing clicked inside of me, I had all the negative stuff to say about them. I was just like a lot of people. I was just like some of the worst people that you ever want to meet when it came down to gay and lesbian. For what? I have no idea. And when I look back on it now, I'm like,
you know where it came from.
Like,
where do you think it came from?
Well, I can tell you this. It's the one issue that transcends race. I can get with a white guy who don't care nothing about me because I'm black, and we can have some commonality because he hates them like I did. It was until I got to a point where I really didn't care about what they did, and I saw that what they were going through, they really didn't deserve to go through. And,
well, okay, let's talk about what we think homosexuals go through. You just mentioned that.
Yeah.
What do we think they go through?
Well, I think they go through a lot of persecution.
From the persecution, we know about the negative attitudes that people have, and even to the point where it becomes violent. But what pushes someone to beat a 17-month-old child to death because he thought that they were acting too effeminate? What is in our belief system that would cause us to do such a thing? What is the fear? Let me ask you a question.
Uh-huh.
If you had a 10-year-old male child who was clearly, and usually by 11 years old, you pretty much have families pretty much know, even a non-sexual male child brings up a whole bunch of stuff. How would you respond to your child who you have figured out he's gay?
Well, I would probably, it's just like I told LaRondi a long time, a couple of weeks ago, that I would love my son no matter what. Nothing but death would separate. But before, I can't say that I would have said, I would have even got to that place because I was.
But what do you think most black men would do?
I think most black men would disorientate them or disenfranchise them somewhere or disown them. And I've seen that, and I know some of my friends that have done that to their children and to their siblings. I'm not saying that it's right, but I believe that, and I can't quite put my hand on it, but I believe that there is good and evil in everybody. And I think that in some instances, the evil part, as far as like the guy who just was overwhelmed and found it necessary to beat a baby to death, I believe that there's good and evil in everybody, but I believe that, you know, your life experience dictates what rules in your life, the good or the evil. And I had to come to a point where I was never violent toward anyone, but I would make snide remarks. I was never that one who would want to get violent because I always felt that I had a lot to lose by doing stuff like that. But I know people who have acted out in issues like that, and it's not worth it. And I haven't made that until I transformed myself and I understood that these people really didn't give a damn about me. They were just trying to live their life. When I could put that stuff in the background and say, you know what, these people are not bothering me, why should I bother them?
Let me ask you about, because I do think that many gay and lesbian black people go to great lengths to hide their sexual orientation because of the fear of the ostracization and people worrying about their sex life. Steins, you know I have some other stuff to worry about. I cannot worry about what people do when they have sexual relations, but I do worry about black boys and girls who have not come into their sexual period of their lives. They too are ostracized and victims of homophobic violence and badgering and bullying. And I think that we've got to get a grip to try to help change people's attitudes about some of this stuff. For instance, we treat people with mental illnesses better in many ways. Or we approach people who are homosexual as though they're mentally ill. And that's very disturbing. You know, for instance, if you think about the AIDS epidemic and you look at the issue of down low. And down low is not just about men. It is also about women. Husband and wives that have homosexual partners and they are not upfront and honest with their wives and husbands about their sexual activity. I mean, heterosexual women who are married and don't have extra sexual relationships outside of the marriage are also part of that huge group of women, the growing number, epidemic number of women, in this black women in this country who are being victimized by their husband's fear. And the husband is being victimized by our fear.
Let me give you a story. This is a messed up story.
Before you tell the story, I'm going to take a break and we'll come right back to you. Can you hold on?
Yeah.
Okay. We're talking to Steins on 347-838-9852. And when we come back, he's going to tell us a story. I like stories. You're listening to Our Common Ground at Blog Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
This is Our Common Ground, alternative access, empowerment talk at Blog Talk Radio, speaking truth to power and ourselves.
And I'm not in grown people's business. Like, homosexual men don't bother me. That's a different lane. Like, lions aren't bothered by walruses. That's a different lane. So I have no problem with homosexuals at all. That's none of my business. My thing with Michael has to do with babies, with little boys, with kids that are evil.
My parents say I have to be home right after work.
That's so gay.
Totally gay.
Ugh, that is so Emma and Julia.
Why do you think that's so Emma and Julia? definitely know when something is dumb or stupid, you say that, so Emma and Julia.
Who says that?
Everyone. Imagine if who you are were used as an insult. When you say that's so gay, do you realize what you say? Knock it off.
You're listening to Our Common Ground. I'm Janice Gray, and I'll be listening.
It's an issue that we skirt around all of the time. And I'm calling us up, particularly those of us who are here as clergy. There is a moral authority that we have dared to stand on as an African-American people. There is an authority that we have dared to stand on as women. But when it comes to our sexual orientation, we're still a little mealy-mouthed. We're still a little mealy-mouthed. Because there is something deep within our psyche, because of the way that we continue to be treated, that is making too many of us question whether or not God really does, in fact, love us equally. That creates a profound sense of nobody-ness. I love my church. I grew up in the Church of God in Christ. I grew up in Bishop Samuel Crouch's church. And you couldn't get to be a bigger name in the Pentecostal movement. I grew up in the mother church. We had a whole separate building called the temple where we hosted all the convocations. I saw them. I saw them come. And I listened. And I listened to rhetoric that was killing my soul. There are no words to say. What it does to the soul of a person to tell them that they are an abomination in the eyes of God, that their very presence is satanic. At least it's slaves. We had a purpose in the universe. But they're telling us that there's not even a place for gay people, for lesbians, for bisexual, for transgender people in God's universe. Do you know what that's like?
Thank you for being with us. We're having a frank discussion at Our Common Ground tonight. Our ideas, our attitudes about homosexuality, looking at homophobia in our community. Steins, thank you for staying over during the break. You had a story. Can you tell the story real fast?
Yeah, I can do that. I had a friend, and a lot of people are going to say, well, this is a messed up story. I had a friend, right, that was losing his hair, right, and this thing really bothered him. But we were telling him, hey, man, look, you got bigger fish to fry than that, your personal appearance. Shave your head, get over your problem, and move on, try to feed your family. I think that that situation, and I was one of the ones that was telling him that, granted, I got a full head of hair, but I did not connect with his sensitivity on that subject matter. And I think that black men, especially black American men, you know, we are being bombarded at every issue. We are just trying to keep our head afloat. We are dealing in this society which is not ours, that is not catered to us. So in a reaction, we tend to say, hey, man, get over it. Do better. Make yourself not gay or whatever. And I think that's part of the problem. See, my friend
that's
was
like
really
saying, that's sh- like saying make yourself not black. Get over
exactly.
it.
I can't argue that with you. But what I'm telling you is that's how we approached it because those are the only skills we knew or we know how to. There is nobody in my circle that could counsel this man the way he should be counseled. So what we said is, man, get over it, man. Look, you got to feed your family, shave your head, do what you got to do. But that thing was really bothering him. So I said that to say this. Although this is totally different, you know, different situation, it's a direct correlation to how we deal with issues. Now, I had to come to a point where I really didn't care about what somebody else was doing once I realized that, hey, look, that person or those people are not looking at me for that. I'm busted, broke down, disgusted. You know, why would they look at me? And they will let you know quick that, hey, look, you are not my type. But what I'm saying, in the mind of most heterosexual men, they thinking that, hey, look, there's always going to be this dude that's checking me out, and I don't like that. It's going to question my sexuality if I identify with this person in some fashion. That's what goes on in the head.
I find that both outrageous and curious, that I just don't believe that black heterosexual men are so insecure in their manhood that they walk around thinking that gay men, just simply because a gay man is around, they're checking them out. I appreciate the story, Steins. I'm going to go to 773, and thank you for your call. We're going to be talking about Dr. Laura Schlesinger sometime in this segment, and I know you have some thoughts about that, and I know Aronde has some thoughts about that, and we hope you'll call back. Thanks a lot. 773, you're on the air. I respect you. Thank you for your call. Hello? 773. I'm sorry, we can't hear you. No, I can't. Can you hang up and call back? Because I'm hearing you attempting to talk, but nothing's coming through. That was it. That was an interesting call. You know, Steins does bring up. It's interesting how there is a dual thinking going on, as Steins expressed it, that on one hand, we want to dismiss it, and we want to say, get over it. And on the other hand, it's the stereotypical kind of thinking about homosexuality that we have. And we haven't even talked about transgendered. But the concern is that there is no magic bullet, with the exception of thinking through that these are people. In the same way that some people, I mean, I don't know if any of you have ever seen the show Hoarders or Obsessed or Intervention. They're beginning to believe that some people are born with a predisposition in their brain for drug addiction. Interesting stuff. 954, you're on the air. I respect you. What are your thoughts?
Well, let's deal with Dr. Laura Scott.
Aronde.
Yes, ma'am. Listen. Okay. You made a great point today. Why would a black woman call a white woman or so-called white woman? And Keith Olbermann definitely put it into check. I sent India and Andre a website. And
oh, we haven't started talking about that yet. We're still on the homophobia.
No, I'm getting into that, too. But anyway, concerning that, as far as Dr. Laura Schlesinger, she is a basic clone of Roy Masters, who I got to know through Jesse Peterson, through Maxine Waters, and this is a deep thing. I lived in L.A. from 88 to 93 during the Rodney King riots, so I got to drop a little history and some names here. So anyway,
I know, but Aronde, come on. We're talking about homophobia right now.
Well, listen, I got my little 3 and 5 year old nephews and great nephews, and I watch these little cats play, and I ain't gonna even deal with the little sisters yet. And I watch how their little manhood is already intact. You understand that? Intact. There is no conflict or obstruction of what their natural reality is of male manhood until something comes into that. When I watch my little, you know, nieces and nephews in the same age, I see their little femininity and their natural reality of womanliness and their reality, right? It's only until the perversion of what adults inject into these kids that makes the difference, that creates the dysfunctionality. Now, the people want to be this, and let me ask you this, man. What are you trying to perpetuate here?
I'm not trying to perpetuate anything. I asked the question, what is your fear? Why do we have homophobia?
I don't fear none of this stuff. I just don't accept it for me or my grandkids.
Fine.
My kids are grown.
But we're
so
talking about in our society.
I'm not out here. I don't know any black men that went out and lynched any homosexuals. I don't know of any. Do you?
Well, let's not confuse the question. The question
no fear of it. The point is, I am disgusted and I am disappointed and I am embarrassed why black men, young black men, have to be subjected to being homosexuals as an alternative lifestyle, because we understand the mothers cannot control that. If the fathers wasn't there, I cannot blame the mothers entirely.
Well,
the Nation of Islam, Minister Louis Farrakhan, went and did something that really made me have to look at him in a second light when they went and embraced homosexuality. Listen, the Nation of Islam didn't go out and create a lynching mob to kill homosexuals, you know? I don't know of any black or Hispanic people that did that.
Let me ask you a question. Do you see yourself? Do you see yourself as a homophobic?
No, I just don't care for them. I don't want that lifestyle. Homophobic, as what you're trying to tell me, what your definition is, no. I'm not looking at them. I understand what they're about. I don't want that for me. I'm not looking to go out and lynch them and say, let's put all these people on an island and do away with them. You know.
Well, are you one of the people who thinks that they can be cured, that they need
damn
to be
right
cured?
They can be cured. Anybody can be cured.
Well,
after
many, many years of study, it has been found that treatment for effeminate tendencies in men cannot be cured. That's all I'm saying. And
do you remember what Saul Peter's about? And I'm going to talk to you about treatment, what they did in Vietnam and what they did in the slave trades. Okay, you talking about treatment. Okay, what
do
you know?
Do you see them as different from you? Do you see them as different from you, Aronde?
Damn right I do. Yes.
And how are they different?
I love me some poontang. You understand what that means?
Okay, so it's only in
nature.
Terms of It's only in terms of the sexuality.
Well, what else would it be? Honestly.
But what is...
Dennis,
I mean,
if I meant you right now, if we didn't know each other from this talk radio thing, blog thing, if I meant you and you look fine and attracted to me, you better believe I'd be hitting on you.
Well, let me ask you another question. How would you approach if you had a son? And I know you're going to say, I'm not going to have a son who is...
No, I have sons.
Gay.
I do.
Okay, I know you're not going to say, I have a... But how would you approach it as a father if you had a homosexual son or a lesbian daughter?
Well, I've been fortunate to not have to experience that. My two little clown head, knucklehead boys, the oldest one's 34 and his other cat's 27.
But this is
no,
a what if question.
No, I'm telling you what they did when the oldest one was getting ready to get married, right? And I didn't even know his girlfriend at the time. And he's going to sit up here and say, hey, man, dad, you know, how would you feel if I married a man?
Yeah.
How would you feel? He said this nonsense to me and his mother.
And so,
okay. I said, okay, well, listen here, man. Well, if that's your gig, you 34 years old? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know what?
Okay.
I get your attitude. Bye.
Yep.
Sayonara.
I get your attitude, and thank you. I've got a board of calls here, and we've got to go to another call. Thank you, Aronde. We'll talk about this more at another
time. Thank you, baby. I love you. Bye-bye.
Love you, too. Bye-bye. 405, you're on the air. I respect you.
Hello, Janice. You do have
Don.
Yeah, this is he. The subject matter tonight is rather interesting. My spin and my views are these. I was raised around in my family an individual who was homosexual. And now this is back in the day, right, Janice? Because you and I are about, you know, I'm about
mm-hmm.
like deep. And so the individual in my family served in the service, went to war, and was honorably discharged during World War II. The individual that I'm talking about never, ever displayed any affection other than love for, in a family way, toward us, and I'm talking about my family, my brothers and my sisters who were exposed to him and around him. In addition, at the end of his life, which was, I think, 84, a chapter was named in his honor, a military chapter, and I'm not going to say where or what. And in addition to that, he did not have any children, but he left a legacy to each of his nieces and nephews that were present at his homegoing, a substantial legacy, I might add, in cash. Now, my view is that in anyone who's had any work experience or been around in the world, have worked around, have friends or associations who have been homosexual, unless you're hiding in some small island somewhere, hiding on some island someplace. And I've been around professionals. I've been around non-professional people. And I do not have a problem with homosexuality per se, and whether or not it's by choice or hereditary, there's so many arguments on that subject as it is interpretations of the biblical word, the Bible. So I won't even address that. Won't even go there. I'm dealing from most people from their experiences that they have with individuals that they know who have these these tendencies, if you want to even put it that way, or this manner of affection, expressing their affection toward a person of their same sex or gender. So, and I think a lot of us are impressed and get our perspective from our associations or from our relationships with our institutions in our society, such as our churches, our schools, etc. Because I've known churches with where we've had friends that were piano players and musicians and etc. And they were not heterosexual. And so we sort of came up and grew up together. Now, in 1973, I believe it was, if I'm not mistaken, the American Psychiatric Association dropped the homosexuality as a perversion or, something that was a psychiatric disorder. Now, that was done by the scientific community. So what we're dealing with now is the effects. You know, what are the effects of this, and how are we going to deal with it and address it in our community? I would say that, let me put it in perspective. If you are being assaulted and your life is in danger and you know you're about to die and you know there's a homosexual that's there that's going to probably step in and save your life, would you tell the homosexual, take your filthy hands off of me, let me die, I don't want to be associated with you? Probably not, common sense. So our experiences and that we have with people who are different from us probably impacts us the most in that way, Janice. So what I'm saying, just to wrap it up, is that if I treat them just like anybody else. I mean, if you have heterosexuals that are wild, woolly, crazy, that I wouldn't want to have any association with one way or another. And when the gay community, if they want to act up and do what they want to do, act out, hey, that's on them. I don't have any association with them either. And so it's six of one, half a dozen of another. And, so we'll be probably debating this until hell freezes over, Janice.
Yeah, you're right, Don. You made some good points. You know, the thing is that if we start equating sexual orientation as part of the character examination in people, we're in trouble as a people. If you look at the list, if you just Audre Lorde, Barbara Jordan, James Baldwin, Tracy Chapman, Billy Strayhorn, Alvin Ailey, people who have Luther Vandross, Sylvester, Johnny Mathis, T.J. Holmes on CNN. Little Richard, Langston Hughes, and I've always suspected Richard Wright, but you know, Elin Harris.
Mm-hmm.
People who have been thoughtful contributors,
yes, exactly.
In our society,
right,
in our community,
mm-hmm.
And the idea that, you know, I name my grandchildren, you know that, and Miles's middle name is Hughes,
mm-hmm.
In honor of what Langston Hughes contributed,
yes,
in his life. And
right.
The thing that, that
Langston Hughes.
Yeah, the thing that, I mean, and James Baldwin, Baynard Rustin, and many more that we don't know about because people have to stay in a closet out of fear. And it is not their fear, it is our fear. It is our fear that somehow it challenges our manhood or our womanhood.
Right. And it's not that, you know, whether you condone it or not, I mean, that's a personal issue. That just like any other issue or any other belief system that you may have or that you engender or you ascribe to. And it's a personal thing.
We need to stop our institutions from scamming us with Bibles and Qurans and Torahs and all kind of, you know, and I love when Irene Jones poses the question, do you know how it feels to have people think of you as an abomination?
Right.
And that's for some people.
That's the lack of knowledge. The lack of knowledge and the lack of individual dedication to explore the subject matter in depth and the Bibles, the world religions, which we studied. We had to do that in order to get our certificates from these universities, world religions. And get a broader perspective than just the United States Christian English religions and different societal traditions, folkways, and mores that we have been exposed to in this country. We need to step out into the world and get a world view of things.
Exactly.
And I think by taking that perspective, we'll be much better equipped to fight the injustice that we fight in this country relative to black people, Janice.
Exactly. Don, thank you for your call. We're going to take a real short break and move on off of this issue because I think that Michael Rowe and his piece and I have posted the link made it very poignant about how we look at our own psychopathology about homosexuality. And he says that maybe this time when we read about the death of Roy Jones, before we look away and try not to think of our own children and how truly defenseless they are, not only against violence, but against an adult's determinant view of who and what they might be, we might examine the way in which we see our society and the complex mosaic that makes up our fellow citizens. We might say a prayer for comfort for his family, then ask ourselves what his death might say about us. This is Our Common Ground and Blog Talk Radio, and I'm Janice Graham, and we'll be right back.
This is Our Common Ground, alternative access, empowerment talk at Blog Talk Radio. Speaking truth to power and ourselves.
There are no words to say what it does to the soul of a person to tell them that they are an abomination in the eyes of God, that their very presence is satanic. At least it's slaves. We had a purpose in the universe. But they're telling us that there's not even a place for gay people, for lesbians, for bisexual, for transgender people in God's universe. Do you know what that's like?
Thank you for being with us here at Our Common Ground tonight. Let you know that tomorrow night there will be an Our Common Ground with Janice Graham all over again. We're going to be meeting with Ifia Nguazana, who is a representative of the U.S. Human Rights Network. They are going to be going to the United Nations Human Rights Commission petitioning on behalf of political prisoners in November. And you should really know that political prisoners in this country, in the United States, are still under a great deal of repression. And the U.S. Human Rights Network, who has been part of this show a number of times over the last 2 years, it has submitted a report to the UN and earlier this year, and we'll be presenting that report to the commission. Their goal is to outline the string of human rights abuses related to political prisoners in the U.S. and political repression. And the submission was a stakeholder report to the Universal Periodic Review. And if you go to our website here at Blog Talk Radio, or if you go to our Facebook site or to our community forum, which is www.ourcommonground-talk.ning.com, you can find those reports. Ifea Nwagaza is a member of the U.S. Human Rights Network. She's a SNCC veteran, a longtime black liberation activist, and she is an essential part of the leadership voice of the Malcolm X grassroots movement and the Back to Black organization, and she is the co-author of the Human Rights Network Cluster Report on United States Political Prisoners and State Repression, and she will be with us tomorrow night at 10 a.m., and we want to thank Navarre Steins and Aronde and Don for their calls on the subject of black homophobia. We're going to be moving on. I'm sure that you know by now that Dr. Laura Schlesinger apologized after a very shocking rant. She went Mel Gibson on all of us on her radio show this week, during which she said the nigger word 11 times over 5 minutes. Let's take a listen to that, and then we will go to our phones and get your views about what all of this that happened. We'll also take a listen to Reverend Al Sharpton and his response to her Mel Gibson moment.
Jade, welcome to the program.
Hi, Dr. Laura.
Hi.
I'm having an issue with my husband where I'm starting to grow very resentful of him. I'm black and he's white. We've been around some of his friends and family members who start make racist comments as if I'm not there or if I'm not black, and my husband ignores those comments, and it hurts my feelings. And he just acts like he
didn't. Can you give me an example of a racist comment? Because sometimes people are hypersensitive. So tell me give me two good examples of racist comments.
Okay, last night, good example. We had a neighbor come over, and this neighbor, every time he comes over, it's always a black comment. It's, oh, well, how do you black people like doing this, and do black people really like doing that? And for a long time, I would ignore it. But last night, I got to the point
where I don't think that's racist.
Well, the stereotype.
I don't think that's racist. No, I think I think that's, well, listen. Without giving much thought, a lot of blacks voted for Obama simply because he was half black. Didn't matter what he was going to do in office. It was a black thing. You got to know that. That's not a surprise. Not everything that somebody says. We had friends over the other day. Got about 35 people here. The guys were going to start playing basketball. I was going to go out and play basketball. My bodyguard and my dear friend is a black man. And I said, white men can't jump. I want you on my team. That was racist? That was funny.
How about the N-word, though? The N-word's been thrown around.
Black guys use it all the time. Turn on HBO, listen to a black comic, and all you hear is nigger, nigger, nigger. I don't get it. If anybody without enough melanin says it, it's a horrible thing. But when black people say it, it's affectionate. It's very confusing. Don't hang up. I want to talk to you some more. Don't go away. I'm Dr. Laura Schlesinger. I'll be right back.
Live together.
I'm Dr. Laura Schlesinger talking to Jade. What did you think about during the break, by the way?
I was a little caught back by the N-word that you spewed out, I have to be honest with you. But my point is race relations.
Oh, then I guess you don't watch HBO or listen to any black comedians.
But that doesn't make it right. I mean, race is a big
my
thing.
Dear, my
Obama's
dear,
my dear,
the point
race
I am trying
a,
to make.
To another level that's unacceptable.
Yeah, we got a black man as president, and we have more complaining about racism than ever. I mean, I think that's hilarious.
But I think, honestly, because there's more white people afraid of a black man taking over the nation.
They're afraid.
If you want to be honest about it.
Dear, they voted him in. Only 12% of the population's black. Whites voted him in.
It was the younger generation that did it. It wasn't the older white people who did it.
Okay. All right. Chip on your shoulder. I can't do much about that. Yeah, I think you have too much sensitivity and not enough sense of humor. Well, it depends how it's said.
Is it okay to say that word? Is it ever okay to say that word?
It depends how it's said. Black guys talking to each other seem to think it's okay.
But you're not black. They're not black. My
husband is
white.
So a word is restricted to race. Got it. Can't do much about that.
I can't believe someone like you is on the radio spewing out the nigger word, and I hope everybody
I didn't
heard it.
Spew out the
you
nigger
said,
word.
Nigger.
Right. I said that's what you hear.
Heard it.
Yes, they did.
But I hope everybody heard it. So what
they did, and I'll say it again. Nigger is what you
so
hear on HB. Why don't you let me finish a sentence?
Okay.
Don't take things out of context. Don't double NAACP me. Leave them in context.
I know what that means, and I know it came from a white person, and I know the white person made
all right.
It bad.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Can't have this argument. You know what? If you're that hypersensitive about color and don't have a sense of humor, don't marry out of your race. If you're going to marry out of your race, people are going to say, okay, what do blacks think? What do whites think? What do Jews think? What do Catholics think? Of course there isn't a one think per se, but in general, there's think. And what I just heard from Jade is a lot of what I hear from black think. And it's really distressing and disturbing. And to put it in its context, she said the N-word, and I said on HBO, listening to black comics, you hear nigger. I didn't call anybody a nigger. Nice try, Jade. Actually, Chucky try. Need a sense of humor. Sense of humor. And answer the question. When somebody says, what do blacks think? Say, this is what I think. This is what I read that if you take a poll, the majority of blacks think this. Answer the question and discuss the issue. Like we can't discuss anything without saying there's isms. We have to be able to discuss these things. We're people. Goodness gracious me. Hypersensitivity. Okay. Which is being bred by black activists. I really thought that once we had a black president, the attempt to demonize whites hating blacks would stop. But it seems to have grown. And I don't get it. Yes, I do. It's all about power. I do get it. It's all about power. And that's sad. Because what should be in power is not power, but righteousness. To do good. That should be the greatest power. Jennifer, welcome to the program.
Hi, Dr. Laura. Somehow I knew I would be next and I'd get you all riled up.
I'm not riled up. It takes more than that to rile me up these days. What can I do for you?
Well, it seems that she was riled up to enough to, one, come back with 20 minutes of show and then getting off. She pulled herself off the air at the end of the hour. A lot of stuff there. But this is what Reverend Al Sharpton had to say on CNN in regard to this show. And I'm wondering, How stupid can you be? Where has her Mel Gibson moments been hiding? And why is she still on the air?
That is absolutely despicable. I mean, if you're that sensitive, don't marry out of your race. So now we've gone from her just repeating the N-word to her saying interracial marriage maybe should not be for those that have sensitivity that she would call hyper. And then she went back into using the N-word. So, I mean, this was not someone that used an example one time, and even that, I think, those of us that do radio, I do, shouldn't do. But here's somebody who continually throughout the show kept going back to that word, almost like she wanted to have a platform in order to do that. And I think that the caller was right to call her on that. And I think those that have called up and are concerned about it were right to say, wait a minute, the advertisers and the people that carry her show should be very concerned about someone that freely using this word over and over again. And the cover is, I'm talking about what I see on
She has apologized, though, now. She said, look, clearly she was
apologized after the outrage. And again, people have to take apologies at face value. But apologizing for what? Apologizing in the context of, again, my feeling in hearing the tape today is that if she was really understanding and apologetic to whom she may have hurt, she could have responded to that when the caller brought it up. She kept going on, she kept going on, and then she went back to it later and suggested maybe the person was too hypersensitive to have an interracial marriage. So based on her feelings when she said it, continuing throughout the show, that would be the basis of one taking her apology seriously or not.
And she denied her. Why do they always deny it? We're going to go to our phones. You're listening to Our Common Ground. And our call-in line is 347-838-9852. If you'd like to share your thoughts about Dr. You know, and she's really not a doctor. She's not a counselor or a psychologist or even a certified therapist. Her PhD is in physiology. We're going to go to our phones. We'd love to hear from you, 347-838-9852. We've got about 12 minutes to throw this one around. You're on the air. I respect you. I suspect that this is a Rondé.
Oh, all right, different number. Hello?
Hi.
Yes, ma'am. How you doing, James?
I'm good. Okay. What's your thoughts about? Give me three thoughts.
I'm going to do it real quick.
Think. Okay.
First of all, she is a clone of Roy Masters, the Human Foundation of Understanding, and I understood him, and everything was okay up until the Rodney King riots. All right? Now, when we start dealing with Christianity and Judaism, what is the differentiation between that when it becomes people who marry outside of the races? If you're a Christian and you're Jewish, that is about as ridiculous as Richard Pryor suing Jim Brown for racial discrimination. You're the same damn people.
Well, I think that when I heard her say, well, maybe you're too sensitive to be married to a white man, that what she was saying in her stupid way, I mean, this is just pathetically stupid, that what she was saying is simply that you have to give up being black when you marry a white person.
That's how we perceive it, people of intelligence. But no, that's not how they perceive it, even though they can change their names. Listen, I sent Andre Queen's sister some stuff today. I hope they share it with you. You know, really. But as far as Lauren Schlesinger, you know, she obviously understood some reality of ramifications that's going to come back to haunt her. But the difference between paranoia and being cautious. There's a difference. Jewish people have always been accused of being paranoid.
Yeah.
And why are they paranoid? You know, you're not, we ain't
going to
even have time for that.
There's some more fundamental issues. Aronde, I've got to go through
yes,
some
ma'am.
Other
you know
calls.
Where I'm going with that. You know where I'm
yes,
going with
that. Yes, I do. Right. Yeah. Thank you for your call. 678, you're on the air. I respect you. Hotep.
Hotep to you, Janice. How you doing tonight?
Thank you. Who's That's calling?
This is O'Henry.
Oh, Henry, how are you?
I'm good. It's a little late, a little past my bedtime.
Good.
But, you know, Janice
so what do you
I
think about the Mel well, moment, the Mel Gibson moment?
The first word I think of for her is despicable. And when I say that, I mean, every
why is she still on the air? Who's calling for her to come off the air?
She has no advice that's worth listening to. But, you know, sometimes people need to look at the persons that they're taking advice from. Maybe they need to do their homework and see what kind of person Dr. Laura really is. Just giving people advice on families, how to strengthen your families. And this is someone who didn't speak to her mother the last 20 years of her mother's life.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, I'm not going to sit here and just throw stones at her. But what could she tell you about family? You won't even get into the, she has all the answers for people who are married and how to be a better wife and husband.
Mm-hmm.
But check her history as far as her naked photos and other things and what's behind that. But that's close.
Yeah.
I'm going to back off of that. I'm going to just stick to yesterday.
But let me ask you a question. What would prompt a black woman who is married to a white man and they are participating, giving her an environment to live in that is filled with white supremacy behavior, to call Laura Schlesinger to ask her about it? Well, I mean, what is the question? You know, I have to ask about this caller. This caller
is
disturbing.
Why she even listened to Dr. Laura and why she thought she was going to get any real advice from her. One of the things that stuck out that Dr. Laura said to her was she figured that now that we have a black president, in other words, I figured that you N-words would be happy with that and just take the rest of the crap that's being thrown at you. Things have gotten worse.
Yeah.
Since, if he wants to use that term, since the black man has been in the White House, has she been paying attention to some of these Tea Party rallies and other things? Or that goes over her head. But
exactly.
Why? Basically, you know, the situation is the lady saying her husband won't take up for her. But I don't know why she would ask Dr. Laura about that. Maybe that's something she should handle on her own. But why would she think Dr. Laura was going to take up for her? And she got
permission to freak out.
You wonder what would some black person be married or be adopted or whatever into a family, a husband who is allowing her to be racially bullied and harassed, not do anything about it, and she's still married to him. That's my question.
Exactly. He's not even defending her. Well, Dr. Laura got a chance to vent a little bit because this has been her feeling probably since around November 4th of 2008. She's been feeling a little irritated. You know, she pointed out how, well, white people got the president elected and what have you. Those are the typical teabagger or the things that come up. I remember during the election a lady asking me something about what side of my brain I was thinking with because of something Reverend Wright said on Sean Hannity's show. And the first thing I said to her was, well, Reverend Wright doesn't speak or think for me. I represent me. But why is it okay for Dr. Laura to tell this woman, well, just get over it, deal with it. That's what you got to deal with for marrying a white guy. It's basically what she was saying. If you want to be a part of this world, then you have to take what goes along with it. The final thing that caught my attention with her is she was saying how you could turn on HBO and listen to a comedy show, and they're using that word all the time. It's comedy. It's entertainment. You know, certain things in real life aren't as funny. You know, in a movie, when when Arnold Schwarzenegger gets upset at someone, he puts on a military uniform, he gets a gun, and blows them away. That's a movie. But in real life,
yeah,
if he does that, there's something wrong with that. And it's the same with comedy.
Yeah.
You know, you choose what you think is comedy, but if Laura can't distinguish between comedy and reality, here again, what the hell is she on the radio for?
Well, you know, which is why Jerry Seinfeld stayed away from redneck jokes. But let me ask you a fundamental question, and there are some people who are saying, well, she wasn't calling a person a nigger, she was just using the nigger term. What is your thoughts about how the word nigger is used?
Well, I'll say this. The people that were using the word nigger against this woman were using it as a weapon and as an insult. And that's exactly what Dr. Laura was doing to this woman by using that word. She was insulting her. There's certain things that can and cannot be acceptable. You know, you may get around.
It was racial badgering.
Right. People use the words they choose to use. In your situation, I'm just using you as an example because you're a female. You may get around a female friend, and you guys are close, and you may use the B word. That woman would not allow me to use that B word because I don't know her. You can say, well, no one should use it. People have to decide what words they choose to use, but there's a setting for everything. Dr. Laura was wrong for using it. I think Dr. Laura just wanted to say that. It's something that she's been wanting to say. It's something that she probably says all the time anyway, but it's something that she's been wanting to say on the air all the time. Basically, she's fed up with black folks complaining. That's basically what Dr. Laura was telling this woman. You're too sensitive.
I agree with you, O. Henry. I absolutely agree.
She apologized today, but what did she apologize for? Did she apologize for what she did, or did she apologize, oh, well, maybe I shouldn't have used that word? She didn't apologize for the dumbass advice that she gave the woman. She didn't apologize for being on the radio again today after what happened. She shouldn't even be on the radio anymore, not just because of that, just because she serves no purpose in society. She doesn't offer any good advice anyway. So it's a waste of time. She's probably one of those right-wing radio shows that it competes against itself in certain markets. And it's not making money, but it's right wing. It's Dr. Law. I own the station. I can put her on if I want to. But imagine if this had been reversed, or if this had been Janice Graham on the air in Boston advising someone like this, a Caucasian woman, this way. Your show would be over. You'd be done.
No. The mics would have been turned. The mics would have been turned off.
When it went to commercial break, you wouldn't have been back. And
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Wouldn't have been back. Oh, Henry, thank you so much for your comments.
I'll be listening tomorrow night as well.
Okay, thank you. And for those of you who did not catch it, that was O. Henry. And we thank him and we thank Aronde for his call on this issue. And I just have to say that the radio doctor, who really isn't a doctor, really, she's posing as a psychologist and a counselor, and I think that she probably shouldn't have been on the air doing this, and she just went full Mel Gibson on this extended rant using the N-word about a dozen times. She advised a woman, maybe you shouldn't have married outside of your race. What was she thinking is my question, and why is she still on the air? My thoughts are this about that, and we thank you so much for being with us tonight. We've only got a few minutes, and our number is 347-838-9852 if you'd like to join in on the conversation. But I'd like to express some thoughts about this, that many white people won't and don't understand a very simple point, and that is that they assume a sense of entitlement in every way in dealing with the issues of race.
And I can think of no other reason than the desire to maintain a certain form of white privilege, the privilege of saying whatever they want, whatever, whenever they want, and feeling as though they have a right to lecture others on how they behave, and not controlling some logic in it. It is unbelievable that this happened on the air, and this woman will still be on the air on Monday morning. That is unbelievable to me. The fact that a black woman felt that she had to seek counsel about being the object of white supremacy in her own community. But whether or not in the black community we continue to use the term nigger, there is no reason why whites should feel that they can. There is a history in that word. And most white people don't know much about the history of racism, but it hardly pardons them. It has been a willed ignorance after all, and we can't just continue to excuse the phony claims of it's over for the kind of behavior that we're seeing in our country. We just can't. You've been listening to Our Common Ground at Blog Talk Radio. I'm Janice Graham. Thank you, O. Henry, for your call. Thank you, Aronde, for your call on this particular subject. Tomorrow night, we'll be here with Attorney Ifea in Wangaza, and we'll be talking about repression and human rights violations regarding U.S. political prisoners. I'm Janice Graham. Thank you so much for being with us. And tomorrow at TruthWorks, there won't be Mo Alfo. And also, Alfo has asked me to let you know, to remind you, that he will not have a live show tomorrow, but you can catch him on demand. And you can catch our TruthWorks series this week on the history of racism on demand at any time, and we suggest at the 4 o'clock hour where we would normally have Alpha. Good night, and thank you. Be safe out there, and don't forget, it's Black August. Look it up.
You've been listening to Our Common Ground. I'm Janice Graham. Thank you so much for being with us. Don't forget, tomorrow night on Our Common Ground, Saturday night open mic, we'll be meeting with Ifea Ingwanza. She is an attorney and part of the leadership of Back to Black and the Malcolm X Grassroots Network. We're pleased to have her with us, who is a representative of the U.S. Human Rights Network that has petitioned the United Nations on behalf of political prisoners in America. Join us each Saturday night at Our Common Ground for Saturday Night Open Mic, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, as we build and grow on Our Common Ground. And until then, I leave you with the words of Abraham Lincoln.
The money powers prey upon the nation in times of peace and conspire against it in times of adversity. It is more despotic than monarchy, more insolent than autocracy, more selfish than bureaucracy. I see in the near future a crisis approaching that unnerves me and causes me to tremble for the safety of my country. Corporations have been enthroned. An era of corruption will follow, and the money power of the country will endeavor to prolong its reign by working upon the prejudices of the people until the wealth is aggregated in a few hands and the republic is destroyed. Wall Street has killed Main Street.
This is Our Common Ground, alternative activism, empowerment talk at Blog Talk Radio, speaking truth to power and ourselves.